This is Twit.
The big Ubiquity cover-up. The most tweeted to me issue in quite a while. Our longtime listeners know that I've been a fan of the Ubiquity Edge Router X, which is an amazingly affordable 5-port Ethernet router. I think it was like $49 for $49 at the time on Amazon. And the thing that drew me to it was that its 5 interface ports were actually individual NICs, actually, you know, network interface controllers. It wasn't a router hooked like a 1-port WAN and then 4 ports of LAN, where they were actually just a digital switch. So that, for example, that, you know, they were all related to each other. These were individual NICs, which meant they could each have their own subnet to create a truly segmented network on the LAN side. And as I've often preached, this is the only way that is network segmentation. And yeah, you can potentially use a VLAN, but it's a little more tricky to do that. So this is the way to create a secure environment on today's LAN with many of our IoT devices. Immediately upon hooking them up, phoning home to Chinese cloud services, there can be no true security if those devices are allowed to sit on the same network as the families or small businesses' LAN. You're sooner or later, we're going to be talking about this on the podcast. So IoT devices must be given their own isolated network. And at the time, the Ubiquity was the only cost-effective solution for doing that. Today, you know, a feature of more modern consumer Wi-Fi routers is to have one or sometimes two guest channels which support explicit inter-network isolation. Sometimes when I'm unable to reach my Sonos speakers from my iPad, it's because they're on the IoT Wi-Fi and my iPad is on the real Wi-Fi, the inter-secure device Wi-Fi, and they can't see each other, which is what you want. Since we so often talked about Ubiquity, it should be no surprise that many of our listeners have made sure that I knew of the mess that has recently erupted over there. It was fresh last week. I got some early indications on Tuesday morning, but there was still some, I quickly took a look at it. Some things were still unknown. Brian Krebs, who was much involved with this, was still sort of working out the details. So I decided just to hold off. Now we know much more. It appears clear that Ubiquity has been proactively covering up the extreme customer affecting severity of a data breach that put like probably many of their customers' networks at significant risk of unauthorized access. Brian Krebs has cited an internal and unnamed whistleblower from within Ubiquity. So, and you know, Brian is very careful. If Brian says this, he has vetted the crap out of it. I mean, I would absolutely believe what Brian is posting on his site, KrebsOnSecurity.com. So in January, Ubiquity seriously downplayed what it said was, quote, unauthorized access to certain of our information technology systems hosted by a third-party cloud provider, unquote. Okay, so while that was literally correct, it was also quite vague. The notice said that while there was no evidence the intruders accessed user data, the company couldn't rule out the possibility that they obtained users' names, email addresses, cryptographically hashed passwords, addresses, and phone numbers. Ubiquity recommended at the time that users should change their passwords and enable two-factor authentication. So, at this point, That's, you know, standard generic post-breach boilerplate. But last Tuesday's report from Brian was able to flesh this out by citing that security professional within Ubiquiti who helped the company respond to the two-month-long breach, which it turns out began in December of 2020. Brian's inside source reported that the breach was much worse than Ubiquiti had disclosed publicly, thus my term cover-up, and that executives were minimizing the severity to protect the company's stock price. So, you know, no surprise there. And to make matters worse, the breach follows Ubiquiti's push, if not, well, it is now, it's become an outright requirement for cloud-based accounts for users to set up and administer the devices running their newer firmware versions. An article on Ubiquiti's site says that during the initial setup of, for example, a Unify Dream Machine, which is a popular router and home gateway appliance, users will be prompted to log into their cloud-based account or, if they don't already have one, to create an account. Then I'll just note, this is similar to my annoyance with some versions, apparently not all, though, because I've managed to bypass it, but Windows 10 is now like, there had been a way to just say, no, I do not want to log into Microsoft in order to, you know, to create an account on my Windows 10 machine. I want to just do it offline, and you have to now jump through hoops. Last time I did that. Anyway, so Ubiquiti's page states, you'll use this username and password to log in, get this, log in locally to the Unify network controller hosted on the UDM, the UDM's management settings UI, or via the Unify network portal for remote access. So, I mean, somewhere, misguided though this was, they thought, oh, you know, everything is cloud. We want cloud. Our users want cloud. They're wrong there. But, you know, so even to talk to the thing sitting next to you with blinking lights that you could see, you log into the cloud and then, you know, they reach back to it. It's like, oh, this is a recipe for disaster. So these changes had not gone unremarked upon. Ubiquiti's customers are decidedly unhappy, complaining about the cloud login requirement and the risk it inherently poses to the security of their devices. Any of our listeners would understand that this is not a good idea. I mean, okay, in some use cases, yes, but not as a blanket requirement where you can't configure the device that, you know, whose cord you keep tripping over without logging into some cloud in, you know, China. Thank you. So, as I noted previously, according to Brian's inside contact, and he calls this guy Adam just for convenience. So we don't know his name. So we'll call him Adam. After all, Adam was the start of all this. The data that was accessed, Adam alleges, was much more extensive and sensitive than Ubiquiti portrayed. So I'll paraphrase a bit for brevity from what Brian wrote. He said, in reality, Adam said the attackers had gained admin access. Okay. The attackers had gained admin access to Ubiquiti's servers within Amazon's cloud service. Okay, so that's that third-party cloud provider that they alluded to back in January. Turns out it's Amazon AWS, which secures the underlying server hardware and software, but still requires the cloud tenant, meaning the Ubiquiti, the user of AWS services, the cloud tenant, to secure access to any data stored there, which apparently they were a little lacking in. The attackers were able to get cryptographic secrets for single sign-on cookies and remote access, full source code control contents and signing keys exfiltration. In other words, yeah, full admin access rights. Adam says the attackers had access to privileged credentials that were previously stored in the LastPass account of a Ubiquiti IT employee. So, okay, it was secure there. Oh, let's put it in the cloud. Anyway, and gained, as a consequence, root admin access to all Ubiquiti AWS accounts, including all S3 data buckets, all application logs, all databases, all user database credentials, and secrets required to forge single sign-on cookies. In other words, this entire Ubiquiti cloud infrastructure was compromised, and Ubiquiti had previously forced all of at least their newer users who were upgrading firmware, even of older devices, to switch to the new and better cloud solution. So this would allow, Adam was explaining, the intruders to remotely authenticate to countless Ubiquiti cloud-based devices around the world, all those owned by Ubiquiti's customers. According to its website, Ubiquiti has shipped more than 85 million devices that play a key role in networking infrastructure in over 200 countries and territories worldwide, all which, or many of which at least, are now vulnerable. Any that have been updated to use Ubiquiti's now mandatory cloud facility were vulnerable to remote takeover. And even after all this, Ubiquiti continues spewing the corporate line. They said, quote, "As we informed on January 11th, we were the victim of a cybersecurity incident that involved unauthorized access to our IT systems. Given the reporting by Brian Krebs, there is newfound interest and attention in this matter, and we would like to provide our community with more information," you know, by not doing so. They said, "At the outset, please note that nothing has changed with respect to our analysis of customer data and the security of our products since our notification on January 11th. In response to this incident, we leveraged external incident response experts to conduct a thorough investigation to ensure the attacker was locked out of our systems." Yes, the barn door has been securely closed and locked. There's nothing in the barn, but boy, is our barn secure. After they were rummaging around and took everything for 2 months. These experts, they continue, identified no evidence that customer information was accessed or even targeted. Okay. The attacker, who unsuccessfully attempted to extort the company by threatening to release, right, that information that apparently wasn't stolen in the first place. Okay, I'm sorry. By threatening to release stolen source code and specific IT credentials, never claimed to have accessed any customer information, though having it all. This, along with other evidence, is why we believe we believe that customer data was not the target of or otherwise accessed in connection with the incident. At this point, we have well-developed evidence that the perpetrator is an individual with intricate knowledge of our cloud infrastructure. As we are cooperating with law enforcement in an ongoing investigation, we cannot comment further. All this said, as a precaution, we still encourage you to change your password if you have not already done so, including on any website where you use the same user ID or password. We also encourage you to enable two-factor authentication, maybe you should use three, on your Ubiquiti accounts if you have not already done so. So, okay. Our takeaway for the podcast is that Ubiquiti's skeptical customers were 100% correct to object to upgrades of their system's firmware, which offered them no alternative other than to manage their own local devices through an online cloud service. That's insane. And this meant that all of these devices were now vulnerable to remote access compromise, though they had never been before this, you know, cloud centralization. It was clearly wrongheaded from the start. Anyone using these cloud-attached Ubiquiti devices should obviously have changed their passwords at the first inkling of this. And certainly, I agree with the advice, use two-factor authentication if you can't get three, if you haven't already done so. And given that intruders into Ubiquiti's network had access to single sign-on cookies and secrets enabling remote access, including signing keys, it would also be a good idea, annoying though it is, to delete any access profiles associated with any of those devices. Make sure the device is using the latest firmware, and then recreate profiles under brand new credentials. And of course, as always, remote access should always be disabled unless it's truly needed. We're going to be running across many things during this podcast where stuff is being done just because it can be. And, you know, that's not security. That's not secure. So anyway, that's the story on Ubiquiti. And yes, I'm up to speed and I'm certainly disappointed in them. The good news is there are now better, more modern, much more consumer-friendly alternatives for doing things like setting up sequestered and segmented IoT networks. Most IoT things are Wi-Fi anyway. So what we talked about back then was getting, you know, an old pokey T-Base 10 or 100 router, or, you know, set up as an access point and plugging it into one of the Ubiquiti router's ports, so you could create a sequestered and segmented Wi-Fi that you could, you know, all your plugs and your light bulbs and your thermostats and things could be connected to, just because you really just don't want those things on the same LAN as stuff you really care about, which, you know, is everything not IoT.